Hello, and welcome to another edition of LEA's Our Voice, a podcast designed to keep our person-served parents, guardians, and friends in the know. As always, we welcome your comments on this podcast and your input on what you'd like us to talk about in the future. Send these comments to this email, podcasts@leacademy.org. That's podcasts at le-academy.org. Today, I'm proud to introduce to you a man that can actually be described in one word, that word being advocate. We're going to learn about this gentleman advocate during this podcast, how he discovered the Life Enrichment Academy in Shelby, and involved for the past 45 years, he has become known as a professional parent. Anthony started his trek in the mid-70s because of his son Ron, disabled with autism. He started at a time when very little was known about autism, a time where experts in medical, psychological, education, and in the government thought that they knew what was best and an institution was the answer. Well, Tony and his wife Emily didn't think so. He continues his journey today as a member of the Board of Directors for Macomb County Community Mental Health, and most recently accepted to a committee assignment to the board of the Community Mental Health Association of Michigan in Lansing. We welcome Tony to the LEA Our Voice.
Hi, thank you very much, Mike. It's an honor. I'm stunned by the request that you made for me.
We are honored. Tony, let's get started by telling us again how your advocacy journey started and why.
Well, first off, some of the background is my number four son, Ron, is now 50 years old, and that's what tells you that I started looking at it when he was 5 years old. He's actually fourth in the birth order behind his three older brothers, and then he's got a younger sister. Essentially, he couldn't speak meaningfully at all until he was nearly 6 years old, and that told us that he is very delayed. He had a very delayed learning. And while we were searching for answers on what to do with this, like every young family is doing right now, the thing we saw was just constantly barriers. And back then, we actually heard the diagnosis of autism. The cause was a refrigerator mother. Now, what they were talking about being a refrigerator mother is that the mother had a cold heart towards the child, and that's the reason that the child wouldn't learn and respond. And this was totally heartbreaking. And fortunately, our ace was the other children. We had three children that were normal. And if you ask any mother right now about three normal boys, you get a pretty good story about how life had to be. So we in effect became our own experts. We knew that refrigerator mother was not the thing, and it hurt us terribly to hear it. And we knew better. There's nothing cold about his mother. And even today, his mother takes care of the family and the grandchildren, of which we have eight right now. Can't be topped. Well, when we were told by the experts to find an institution when Ron was 9 years old, that became the first day of a long journey of not taking no for an answer. I could not accept. And it turns out that system after system kept telling us, no, you can't, we don't, go away, things of that nature. And that's when I made a personal commitment to myself to quit looking at the barriers and to start learning about everything I could about autism and its related science and the treatment. And this led me to join a lot of the support groups and conferences and meetings and reading the autism journals and so forth to learn about the condition. Today it's a little different because there are many options. There are many treatment plans, and there's even insurance coverage for younger families.
Well, your journey part of your life's journey as a professional parent and advocate brought you to the Life Enrichment Academy of Shelby. And what prompted you to enroll Ron?
Well, this is pretty simple. We were very strong in Ron's development to make his own choices. It was a tough thing to do, but the way we did that was we were able to, when there was something that he had to choose, we gave him two or three choices, all good choices, never any bad choices. So he learned how to choose, and that was one of the keys. So it starts with Ron's a goal that was actually in his service plan, which involved preparing him for work life. At your CMH, which is your community mental health, the supports coordinator there arranged for three similar programs for day programs that we could look at. During this process, many of Ron's fears, such as the noise level or the number of people or the ceiling height or the color of the walls and other environmental things were had to be highly considered for his condition, because many of these things are overwhelming for a person with autism. We may help guide him, and we were actually giving him facts and figures about his choices, but it turns out that he preferred several of the things that LEA was offering. What he enjoys most about it is the culinary arts, for an example. That's cooking. I mean, it's rare to hear somebody that enjoys cooking, but, you know, of the 10% of us in the world that do enjoy it, Ron happens to be one of them. It turns out that he was also getting that kind of help at home, and today he volunteers to get involved in cooking. He loves to stir the meat up for a pot of chili, for an example, or serve the table, or do things of that nature. Another thing he liked about LEA was janitorial, and he actually had a short part-time job doing janitorial. He loved volunteer programs. He loved community visits and exercises outside, artwork and wood projects and crafts and things of that nature. And while Ron's behavior and autism and his learning disability can be challenging, LEA has always been very innovative with the options to serve what his fear might be or his overwhelming issues might be. And he's happy with it, and he likes it, and so do we.
We're happy of that. You mentioned a statement, creating an example of their own. How hard was this for you, and how hard would it be for other families to embrace some of the suggestions that you could share about what we'd call hands-on advocacy?
Well, the basic principle here is years ago, it was a common requirement to fall into some sort of system that was molded for all the developmentally disabled folks. A little story that I can tell you relates to this is, autism really didn't fit every mold that was given to a disabled learner. And some of the detail behind that is when we first came into it in the about 1983 or so, the emotionally impaired classes were the only thing that were available, emotionally impairments. And all of your staff members are trained in the emotionally impaired. One of the principles in emotional impairment is when a child is acting out, a lot like a normal child might be acting out, if you ignore that behavior, it tends to extinguish. In autism, not so. That is that's a behavior that is a communication. And the magic there is to get the service provider to understand that communication and take action on that. And what that turned into is one of the assignments that we took on during our later on advocacy. It was that parents knew that the EI classrooms were not adequate for autism. So a small band of about eight families or so in the Macomb chapter and in the Michigan Society pulled together, pulled our loved ones to meetings with the Board of Education in Lansing. And this was beautiful. There they are, up on that curved tower, sitting up there higher than the rest of the group and looking down at the audience. And we're explaining to them that these are the people that you need to make your decision on. Now, bear in mind, I need to tell you that this was one of those years that there was a crunch for education dollars, a major removal of dollars from systems. First started with our disabled special classrooms. The second thing that was turned down mostly were athletic programs. Well, what we did in that boardroom the day we brought our children there was beautiful. Ron walked up to the wall and started flicking the light switch. Now, this infuriated the seniors that were up there on that upper step. Michael walks up to the blackboard and he starts screeching on the blackboard, and that's making them angry. And there's a third one that did something, I can't even remember what it was. But let me fast forward to what we wound up with. We sold them on the notion that teaching autism is different, and here's what we need. We need 2-to-1 ratio for students versus paraprofessionals. We taught them that they need to teach the instructors the whole etiology of autism, and we had to come out there with an all-year-long program, and that was the invention of what we call EI versus AI, or AI or autistic impaired. Anyway, today the trend is the system, the bottom line on what I'm explaining to you is that the system must mold to you. You don't mold to the system. And this is done through plans that are geared for the individual. And that turns out to be what we call today person-centered planning. But the important thing that you need to do is you must request that in the person-centered plan. And that's the way you get them not to fit some kind of a mold that was presented in front of you.
From something as simple sounding as allowing your son to discover things on his own, like riding a bike in the neighborhood, other parents of a loved one with autism might shy away from those type of activities. How can we instill this confidence in a person served to prove to be advantageous in the long run for parents?
I'll never claim to be an exact science with this one. Building confidence is a highly individual thing. I can't tell you exactly what's going to work for you, but I can tell you two examples that work for Ron, and this might be a thought starter for you. The main thing here is that everything you teach, the treatment of choice is teaching, and that takes a lot of repetition. Two stories I'll give you very quickly. At age 13, at age 14, and at age 15, Ron asked me to buy him a lawnmower for his birthday. Now, what normal parent would think of doing that with a disabled person? But I had to smack myself in the head, and I mean really hard. What is he trying to communicate to me? I went out and bought him a lawnmower that was a real good one. Long story short, he wound up cutting my lawn for the following 20 years. I had a volunteer. This took some constant teaching. I tried him more than 50 times to get those lines straight. Ron wasn't interested in cutting the lawn. I'll tell you what he was interested in later. The second thing is he wanted to ride his bicycle in the neighborhood. Now, I got to ask every parent that might be listening to this, would you let your child ride by himself in the neighborhood on a bicycle? Most of you would say no. Well, at first, I took him on every ride. And it's very fortunate that in our neighborhood, well, I had 7 different neighborhoods we could ride into. It was very good. And it also was good for me because I was becoming healthy at the time. I was riding with Ron. So he now, that worked out into enough repetition that he gained the confidence, and so did I, that he could do it every day. And today, at 50 years of age, he is still out there on a bicycle every day. And guess what? So am I. I go out too. It's making us feel good. But here's where the two scenarios are connected, and this was the eye-opener for me. He didn't care about the grass. He cared about that little fan that was on top of the lawnmower that was spinning. He was motivated by a spinning object. Now, I'll close this one real quickly. Those of you that might have remembered the name Temple Grandin, she is the one, the PhD with autism in animal husbandry, and she was autistic as the day is long. She had a chance to talk to one of our conferences, and she gave me the words face to face. Find your kid's fixation and see if you can turn it into money. And today, she still says that same thing. So anyway, Ron is motivated by spinning objects like fans and helicopters and piston aircraft and small motors. And our challenge right now is to find something that works that into his work life that'll maintain his direction towards staying on that job.
That is amazing real life. Tony, your path of advocacy has taken you on a journey that has expanded from the personal into a much larger light. Tell us about the journey that began in 1980 and continues to present day. Would you be touch a bit on the many committees and, of course, the boards you now serve on?
Well, in 1980 to 1986, that's when virtually nothing was known about autism by the professional community. I had joined what was called back then the Macomb County Chapter for the Michigan Society for Autistic Children. Little did we know at that time that those children would turn into adults. But I was their first treasurer and one of the founding members of their community. And it's during that time that we actually did this trek to Lansing that I told you about moments ago, where we took our kids to the board there. And in 1984 to 86, somehow I won an award called the Parent of Year Award of Merit. And I brought it just to show you. And I don't like people that brag, but I got to tell you this.
You're not a bragger.
The
Michigan Society for Autistic Citizens 1985 Parent of the Year Award of Merit to Anthony Plua. Excellent.
I thank you very much for reading that for me, Mike. Anyway, that happened during an assignment that I took for the Michigan Society, which was located in Lansing. That one turned into the National Society for Adults and for Children and Adults with Autism, still a very complicated name. So I was a board member for National Society was located in Washington, D.C. And here I am at a board meeting one day looking to advance the knowledge in autism. And we had a very active chapter in Los Angeles. We charged them with getting the movie makers in Hollywood to create something on autism. And they did one of the best things, and most of you have heard of it. It was called Rain Man. The movie
Oh, yes.
Rain Man was invented, prompted by the Autism Society of America, and that's another thing that segues into the new name. When we were trying to research autism, anybody that was a researcher that wanted to know about autism, you don't start out looking in the phone book. And by the way, that's what we had back then. It was a phone book. Everybody's so fortunate today, you got Google. You don't need a phone book. But back then, I was taking a marketing class with my work and learned that folks aren't going to look for national and find autism. as a resource. They need the word autism as the first word. And that's when I made a motion to the national board that we change the name to Autism Society of America. Today, that name sticks. And it is has been a tremendous move ahead. And between that change and the movie Rain Man, we like advanced the knowledge about autism in an easy 25 years. And of course, beyond that, Ron was doing pretty well in his situation. So for several years, I did not have an active position until the Macomb County lost about $33 million in funding from the state of Michigan. Many reasons why that happened, but it turns out I joined what's called the Citizens Advisory Council. It was where citizens would advise the director of the CMH on what street life is like and what's happening on the street. That one turned in to an opening that was on the Macomb Community Mental Health Board of Directors, and the Board of Commissioners, who have 13 different departments that they are over, the community mental health was among jails and among police and among roads and among all the other things and the priorities that they have. Our priority was on the bottom. Who wants to pay money for disabled people? It was really the message. Anyway, it turns out that I wound up serving on the Recipient Rights Advisory Committee and the Policy and Legislative Affairs Committee. And as a following legislators, what I was doing was I was attending these coffee meetings with Peter Lucido and Doug Wozniak, those are our members, and keeping them warm on the notion of disabled folks, and we need their support when it comes to paying our tab. And I have to say that Peter Lucido was very strong in bringing home the bacon for us. He was a good one. Anyway, the last assignment that I got followed with the an assignment at, and I was a nominee and I was accepted on the Community Mental Health Association of Michigan, which, and my assignment covers a legislative and policy happenings that are covering Macomb, Oakland, and Detroit Wayne. So that's a long story of 45 years of advocacy.
That's phenomenal. You know, so much good information for other parents and guardians out there. So good that, surprisingly, and this is going to be a surprise to you, we're going to turn this into a probably at least a three-part series because of the wealth of information that we have to share with other parents and guardians out there. So a lot has been shared about autism, but it won't be entirely the next two series. Will be a series on advocacy in general. And I'm sure I want to have you back to share good stories and information designed to let our persons know that they're not alone out there when it comes to autism, advocacy, and good mental health for their loved ones. Tony, please fill us in on what we can expect next time. We do have a title, and it's pretty straightforward. What happens when I'm gone?
I would say that one of the most pressing concerns that a family is involved with mentally disabled ones is that very thing, what happens when I'm gone. And many families right now have their own system invented. There's a sibling involved maybe or a volunteer that might take over. But you right now you feel that you're the only one that can care for your loved one as well as you can. That may be true. But that's not going to be there when you're gone. So you have to prepare the system to run automatically with the supports that are appropriate in order to and built in. So we have some thought starters on what we're going to call person-centered planning and least restrictive environment and how to access those support programs that actually produce self-sufficient as possible. Although we all know that your disabled loved one may never be totally self-sufficient, there are systems in place that can give you as much as possible. Hope to tell you that next time.
Not everyone can, but I think we'd be surprised at the number that can. I mean, Ron is a prime example.
Oh, yeah, going all the way from nonverbal
to Mr. Independent.
Yes.
Apartment living.
And guess what? He's a comedian.
I'll tell you what. I think we're going to include Ron in one of these podcasts. I'd like you to like him to bring him with you to introduce him to our listening audience. With that, Tony, I say thank you so much. Looking forward to our next installment. You have been listening to the Life Enrichment Academy's Our Voice. All of you, take care. Talk with you soon. Thanks, Tony.
That felt pretty good to me.